From Capital Broadcasting Company and WRAL.com, this is The Wrap at NC Capital.
Good evening. Welcome to the Tuesday edition of The Wrap, the special Senate budget edition. I'm Laura Leslie, WRAL Capital Bureau Chief.
I'm Travis Fain. I'm WRAL's State House reporter. I have not read all 1,000 pages or whatever of the Senate budget bills. Sorry.
Nor have I, because at this point, a lot of it is just conjecture. As I pointed out last night, you know, this is step two in a four-step process.
Yep.
And a lot of this stuff's going to get rewritten. That said, it still is interesting to see what Senate leaders prioritize in this budget and what messages they're sending with some of these special provisions that are in here that aren't necessarily related to money. And of course, I mean, money also tells you what people prioritize.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you want to know somebody's priorities. Look how they're spending the money. Look who they're hiring. Look at the policies they're implementing. And, I mean, kind of a budget is almost all of that. And a couple of policies that are getting slipped in there, bills that they know they can't get past the governor any other way, and I don't think can get past the governor this way.
Nope.
But one of them would, you know, rein in the emergency powers, require Council of State to sign off on these long-term shutdowns the governor has been doing.
And the legislature after 45 days.
That's right. Council of State could extend it for 45 days. Legislature would have to vote after that. Also, the collusive settlements,
the term that the Senate's been using, the Republicans have been using.
Yeah, this is where the Attorney General and the State Board of Elections signed off on a lawsuit to change the date that absentee ballots would be due during the 2020 elections. Republicans did not like that. They were taken by surprise. They were also involved in the lawsuit, so I can see where they might have been a little miffed on that one. But this would basically put the kibosh on that. It's another bill that either had passed or is in the process of passing that the governor had not looked kindly on. So
another provision in there would explore the concept of moving the UNC system offices to Raleigh. It's a kind of a look at what they call the downtown district, the government district here. There's a bunch of buildings here. They've had people, they've had positions cut. Some have been renovated, some haven't. Things have already done some moving around. So looking at whether or not perhaps, for example, UNC could end up with the community college system under one roof, which if you want those two systems to work together, that might not be a bad idea.
Yeah, there's also some upgrades for the legislative complex. I think $2 million and change. Can't remember exactly.
Oh, no, $8
million. Well, there's $8 million for, like, broadband IT infrastructure.
Technology, yeah.
And then there's another $2 million, or that number may be wrong. But, I mean, the word cistern is in there.
Oh, yeah.
Bathrooms are involved. So
well, our bathrooms.
I don't know about the fountains. I'll put in a good word on that one.
The bathrooms are, you know, what, 1960s special. So, yeah, probably would not be a bad thing. The Senate Appropriations Committee spent a good chunk of the day today going through the bill. Not so many amendments actually made it because of the list of not allowed in the rules today was epic. Okay, so I mean, normally when this happens, you know, the committee chairs make rules about what amendments will be accepted and how you can move money, and this is not unusual.
Yeah.
But the list today was just kept going and going and going. I understand part of that is because federal money is being used in places here that they believe that it can be used for, but they don't want it to be moved around and then run into trouble with the way that those relief funds are being used with the feds.
There is a ton of federal money in here. From the American Rescue Plan, the ARP. I don't know if anybody's going to start calling it the ARP, but if you hear that,
they do.
That's what it's called too. And I think it's $5.1 billion, or I don't know.
Yeah, that's correct.
So the bulk of those funds that are at least going to flow through state government are in here. They're kind of mixed into the budget here, there, and elsewhere. $1 billion for a jobs grant program. This is businesses that got a PPP loan or some other sort of help last year, or I guess this year.
They would automatically get, yeah.
They could automatically get, now there's some math involved.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's $1 billion for businesses. There's also another $500 million in there for businesses that did not get a PPP loan or some other help, but can show, I think, that they had lost 20% of their revenue from 2019 to 2020. So there are grants in there for that. And then there's also some more money for the Retool program, which focuses more on minority-owned businesses. I think it's called historically underutilized businesses, mm-hmm. is how that's defined. There's $700 million for broadband. That's more federal money. And that's real close to what the House wanted. I think the House wanted $750 or something. The governor wanted $1.2 billion.
Yeah, I was going to say, the governor wanted quite a bit more than that. But part of what the governor wanted the money for was to help to subsidize the cost of broadband for some of these folks in some of these more low-income communities where, even if they can run the broadband out there, the question is how many people are going to be able to afford the service.
But, so all three branches, or the House, the Senate, and the governor, on board with broadband expansion. Also, water and sewer, $1.27 billion was my math on it. There were multiple categories for, water and sewer.
Right.
So, as we talk about, we don't know what the budget's going to look like going forward, but there are some things where we can now say, all right, we're going to do broadband.
Yep.
We're going to do all this water and sewer money, and we'll see kind of what else we find consensus on, assuming they can pass a bill. But you would think that even if they have to split the ARP money out into a separate bill somewhere along the way, like they've done with other COVID packages, that could be done even if they could not come to an agreement on some of this other stuff.
Yeah, it certainly didn't look like the Senate was expecting the governor to to want to sign this, given some of the stuff they put in it.
Yeah, no, and this speculation in the press room that maybe the Senate doesn't mind if there's no budget. The continuing resolutions and the mini budgets. Even Senator Berger has said, we'll do mini budgets. I think he said it became more likely as every day passed, certainly signaling that he was fine with it. But a lot of things in this budget document where it looks like, okay, that's a starting position. They know, they left themselves plenty of room to come up a little bit if they want to.
Absolutely. And Senator Brent Jackson today pointed that out on one of the topics that I've been following, which is retiree COLA raises, right? Mm-hmm. For years now, retirees have gotten almost no cost of living increases. They've gotten a bonus. They might get a little bit of a bump here and there, but it's not a steady increase that they can count on year over year. And if you follow the amount that they're getting versus the inflation rate, they're so far behind. So I was surprised to see that there was no retiree raises in the budget. But Senator Jackson said today when he was asked about that the expectation is that the House is going to include them because the House usually does, and then they can negotiate from there.
Yeah. It was kind of surprising how austere is maybe not the right word, or maybe not a word I should be using, but given how much money we have between the federal money and the reserves, I thought this budget would have gone a little further on some things, and that's why I kind of think there's a willingness to move some of the levers up here.
Well, possibly.
Possibly. What I don't know could fill a warehouse, folks.
In the meantime, a new bill that kind of popped up yesterday, heard in committee today, would basically ban the governor from issuing a statewide mask mandate for schools in the next school year. It would leave that up to local school boards instead, which are, of course, more easily pressured by local parents who don't want to see masks in schools. What we heard in discussion today was some concerns from Democrats pointing out that keeping the masks on in schools right now is CDC guidance, because unvaccinated people are still supposed to have their masks on, and most kids, the vast majority of them, are not old enough to be vaccinated or haven't been yet. Representative Willis today in committee said, he cited some data from a couple of different researchers who don't believe that COVID poses that big a health risk to kids, at least not for severe illness, and said, we need to get them back to normal. The most interesting thing about the day was the public speaker who came to testify in favor of the bill. His name is Jackson Willis. He is the youngest son of Representative Willis. So he's a rising eighth grader. So he got up there and gave a little speech about how it makes, masks is making it difficult for him to see and hear his teachers and his friends and sort of the impact of it, saying kids aren't wanting to speak up in class because it's just so hard to hear and speak. So, interesting perspective. You can find more about that on NC Capitol.
All right. passing through the full House and onto the governor today is this bill that says if you run an organ donation list, you can't discriminate against someone if they have Down syndrome. You can't deny them. We're not aware of that happening. Maybe it has. I don't know.
I thought I had heard that possibly there was a case in which a family thought that a person with Down syndrome had been skipped over, but it was, quote, worked out. So I don't know. I have not seen any sort of more information on it than that.
Yeah. At any rate, if the governor signs it, it's going into law that you can't do that. You can't skip someone over. You can't prioritize someone else more. That's at least the way I read the bill. It's a fairly long bill. as some of these things often are. That went through easily and is on its way to the governor. The child marriage bill, that's the one that used to say you had to be 18 to get married, as opposed to the current threshold, which is 14 in North Carolina, one of the lowest in the country. It now says you got to be 16, but you also can't be more than 4 years
apart.
Age difference. I have trouble describing this every time.
Wouldn't it just be easier to make it 18 and leave it then?
Well, that's what was tried to be done in the Senate, and it ran into some problems with some people. We don't really fully know exactly who was blocking what. But at any rate, it passed the Senate unanimously as is, with the four-year requirement and the threshold up to 16. And now it has moved through House Judiciary Committee today. And House Majority Leader John Bell said he sees smooth sailing for the bill. So we assume that will go to the governor soon, except it picked up a little technical amendment today. So it'll have to go back to the Senate for concurrence.
Coming up tomorrow, you ready to move on to tomorrow?
Yeah, we can talk about tomorrow.
So tomorrow, a couple of interesting things. Number one, the most interesting.
The marijuana bill, the Bill Rabin, Senate Rules Chairman Bill Rabin's medical marijuana bill that lists a number of ailments that marijuana would be allowed as a treatment for. It's going to get a hearing tomorrow. I'm told it's going to be information only, as sometimes these things are. He has no promises, even though he's the rules chairman, that it's going to move through committee or pass.
But he wants it to get a hearing.
But it's going to get a hearing at least, and we don't know where it'll go from there. The bill changed a little bit. They took it lists a number of ailments, and they took two of them out. One of them is glaucoma that came out. I can't remember the other one.
That's well known.
This is an area of science that I have only researched.
So I'm
partially
asking because you've paid more attention to this than I have. So would it? Does it depend on federal guidelines changing the Schedule 6?
I'd have to read the bill again. I mean, there's usually that interplay. But this is one that I'll have to read tonight before I
Well, I don't know. I mean, there's an awful lot of states that have gone ahead and done this without federal okay.
My memory is that it is that kind. Yeah. But again, I need to read it again. But so that will move forward. And Senator Rabin, real passionate about it. And I mean, at one point saying, you know, he thinks that this is good for PTSD. He feels like there's a lot of evidence for that. And I've read studies. I've heard from soldiers, you know, people who've returned from war zones who say it does help them. And he said, look, we're trying to give them tax breaks of the veterans in North Carolina. That's a House proposal, I believe.
Right.
Why don't we do something that could help save their lives? And I mean, just really, he was kind of hammering those sorts of points when I was talking to him about it today. Mm-hmm.
So. Also coming up tomorrow, the Farm Bill is back yet again in House Ag, our favorite. So this year, there are a couple things in the omnibus that have kind of attracted attention. One of them was the biogas digester stuff, right? I think, which it sounds like they've kind of gotten smoothed over to some extent when
DEQ, about 3 years.
I know. Well, DEQ came and talked about it. So I don't know. I can't speak for the Enviro folks, but it sounded like at least the lawmakers were understanding this. the part that is still kind of up in the air is the part about whistleblowers and Department of Labor investigations into retaliation. And so I understand that Representative Majid was going to run an amendment, said he was last week, going to run an amendment to remove that section from it. So it'll be interesting to see whether or not that comes out in the service of what Representative Dixon has been saying, which he really wants this to be a bipartisan, unanimous bill that gets through the House and Senate this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Farm Bill rarely is. It just always seems to be a long bill with a lot of different disparate
and
stuff.
And mischief.
In it.
There's always mischief.
And one or two things, yeah, where it's like, wait, what about this?
And then, of course, in the Senate tomorrow, they're going to be taking up the finance part of the appropriations bill. So we're going to hear more about the tax package, about the actual cost of those tax package, you know, the cuts.
Yeah, and I saw a tweet from Brent Woodcox and Senator on the Senate leadership side, staffer there. He said something like a 37%. Tax cut, income tax cut.
For median household income.
Based on median household income, which is interesting, I imagine that's because the standard deduction moves up so much.
Right. The standard deduction actually would stay the same as it was proposed in the bill that they had a couple weeks ago. The big change would be in that diminishment of the percentage rate, the tax rate itself. But a lot of these folks are, you know, especially folks toward the bottom, are going to be mostly in the zero tax bracket anyway.
Yeah.
So. I think that's about it for
that's
me.
That's good enough. Yep, that's enough.
That's more than enough, more than you ever wanted to hear. Anyway, please join us tomorrow. We will let you know what happens here at the legislature. And thank you so much for joining us.
This podcast is a production of WRAL.com, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. If you like the show, we'd appreciate you giving us a review and sharing it with your friends. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts or your favorite listening app.